On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, Rory is back. We discuss Josh Jacobs' not-so-subtle dig at John Gruden, Greg Olsen's pretty play calling, Derek Carr's new role, and everything good, bad, and ugly against the Broncos. Plus, Marcus Johnson from the Tame Tote Live podcast looks at the Raiders' offense and how defenses are just not ready for Greg Olsen. And we love when you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares.
I'm into fucking emails.
There it is!
Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto, Rory Parsons. Let's have some fun today. Prodigal Son returns. Got a little threesome going on today.
Ooh.
A little menage.
Rory brought the cookie.
Yeah. The Raiders are 4-2, and all of a sudden Rory comes out of the woodwork. Yeah. Wants to be a part of the action. Oh, what are the odds? Shocking. Two-game losing streak. He's nowhere to be found. If the playoffs start today, we're in the show, and all of a sudden Rory's like, hey, guys, let's hop on. Let's talk about it.
I got some time today.
This is when I'm happy, man. You don't want me at the end of the season. That's when I'm a depressing motherfucker.
You're funnier that way, though.
I'm just sulking in the corner, fucking freaking out, man. Mm-hmm. This is better.
All right.
Well, it's a good time. We're going to get into, the good, the bad, and the ugly from the Broncos game. Marcus Johnson is going to join us here in a little bit. We'll talk. Got some audio from Derek Carr throughout the week. Some Henry Ruggs audio. A lot of things to get into, but the first thing I want to talk about is Josh Jacobs today. We're recording this on Wednesday night. Josh Jacobs did his press conference, and you tell me if this is a subtle dig, a not-so-subtle dig, a accidental dig, but this was Josh Jacobs talking about being, the game on Sunday against the Broncos, first game without John Gruden as the head coach in, 3.5 seasons. He said, man, the sideline was just so it was like it wasn't no anxiety. It was weird. It was like everybody was calm. You didn't have somebody cussing at you or going crazy at the refs. None of that. Something bad happened, and it's like, okay, next play. Is that a flagrant overhand right to John Gruden? Maybe a little subtle body shot or not even a punch?
I don't think it was even a punch. I don't think he was saying it. Like, oh, yeah, John Gruden is what made it so much of a more toxic environment. I think he was just like, oh, he was just stating facts. Like, this is how it was.
Yeah.
That's how I took it. I mean, I've gone into places and started working, taking over teams and things before. And, the workers would be like, oh, yeah, the last person who was here was this and was that, was all this. And it's like, I feel a lot more calmer to come into work. And I think that's just the different personality and the different style. That Bisaccia has over what Gruden had. So, honestly, like when you have adults that you're leading and people who are mature and know what their job is, you don't need to be fiery and yelling at cussing people out. Like it's just, that's so old school. You don't really see that anymore.
I saw it as a bit of a dig. I think Josh Jacobs just keeps it real. I think he's always pretty candid in his interviews. You know, he had another comment about the offensive line when he was talking about, he looks at the tape sometimes and he's like, guys, I don't know what the fuck you want me to do. It was something along those lines.
Yeah.
He's just a candid dude. He keeps it real, speaks from the heart. I think that it is a reflection of the head coach. No doubt about it. I think that Bisaccia has got a much more professional, calm demeanor, more authentic, if you will. Like you do always wonder sometimes when Chucky's just losing his fucking head on the sideline, is that really him or is that him just playing up to the persona? You know? So,
well, the thing you have to ask yourself too is like, where does John David Gruden end and where does Chucky start? Like, I think he may even have lost that because it's like a lot of these things, he was just going off and we're like, dude, it's the beginning of the second quarter and like, you're up. Like, what the fuck? Like, just chill. And I can see where that can get bothersome after a while. I can get tiring.
That's pretty standard issue football coach though. Like, that's definitely not exclusively a John Gruden thing. Flipping out on the sideline. That's a lot of football coaches.
Yeah, I understand that, but it's like how long can you take that from somebody who just seems to be about themselves?
I don't know. It just seemed always disproportionate to me. You know, like he'd be completely chill. He'd be kind of smiling. He'd be pretty on top of his shit. And then it would be one refereeing decision. There was usually a flag that was a pretty blatant full start or something along those lines. And then he'd fucking lose it. You know, it was always disproportionately. It always seemed inauthentic.
Like he was, he knew the cameras were on him. And that's when he would blow up.
I don't know. I feel like we're doing a lot of like revisionist history here. Like, I feel like he blew up on sideline, like sidelines, maybe
slightly emails,
more,
JR.
Maybe slightly more than the average head coach.
I would say that
was it a crazy amount more than.
I just think that when he did blow up, it was just like a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like,
it was a little extra.
He was a little extra, yeah, and not because we're basic. It's because he's extra.
I also wonder if it's part of kind of the personality of this team, because there's not a lot of big personalities on this team, right? Like our best players are generally understated guys. Darren Waller, Derek Carr, Max Crosby, Josh Jacobs, who just spoke. Like, you know, these aren't loudmouth Antonio Browns or guys like that, that maybe feed off of a John Gruden, where it's like, oh yeah, like we're all just like screaming our heads off when something's going on in the field. It's like, no, we're, you know, obviously, you know, they're blowing up, right? Darren Waller gets a taunting penalty because he catches a 15 yarder and yells, right? So like, They're not mutes, but it's generally, you know, the leaders on the team are understated guys by football standards. And so you throw John Gruden in that mix and he just looks like a bucket of dynamite compared to like, you know, Derek Carr.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Max Crosby is a pretty big flex. I don't know if you follow his Instagram, but he's nice and flicky. I like his flash. I like his style. And he's getting a little bit more animated.
He'll blow up after a sack, obviously. And he'll like, you know, we've seen this the Instagram videos of him at like a buddy's wedding, going nuts in the limo and on the dance floor, looking sharp, right? Chain on the outside, I'm into that.
Fuck.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, when it comes to by football loudmouth standards,
he's not Tom Brady on the sidelines. It's a nunnery on the side. Yeah, we don't have that. We don't have somebody screaming people's faces.
Speaking of Gruden, this was obviously, you know, it's been a week without Gruden, like a little over a week now. It's still kind of like settling into the new normal. Deshaun Watson, it's being reported by a lot of the Houston media, is getting traded to the Dolphins. That's the rumor. There hasn't been a lot of follow-up on the initial story from today. Not a lot of details have been out there. It sounds to me like it's a planted story to try to get the conversation started. But it certainly makes sense that Deshaun Watson is going to go somewhere else. Of the other 31 teams in the NFL, someone's going to take a shot at an all-pro quarterback who's not even entering his prime yet, right? If he never plays again, it's worth it for a draft pick or two or a player, expensive player or something, to try to get Deshaun Watson on your team to maybe be your franchise quarterback for the next 10 years. And so I don't know who started this on the rundown. I think it was Soto.
I did.
Watson close to deal with Miami. Does this mean John Gruden can recover? So if Deshaun Watson, with all his problems, is rumored to be back into the NFL and maybe playing a game this season, can John Gruden come back from it? And Rory, you're already shaking your head.
Yeah, no way.
No way? Right? Ever? I mean, or just this season?
Supply and demand, guys. Like, the demand here for Deshaun Watson, a stud quarterback, maybe top five quarterback in the league, 26 years old. Last season that he was in the league, he absolutely fucking shredded it versus John Gruden. Like, he's brought us from what, 6-11 to fucking 8-8 over 3 years. You know what I mean? It's not the same. We're comparing apples and oranges. I mean, Gruden might have a future in the league, but I mean, it seems a long fucking way off based on, you know, everything that transgressed this week, last couple of weeks.
A lot of people have come back from way worse than John Gruden sending shitty emails 10 years ago, right? Like, people have come back from way worse in the long term, right?
Yeah.
Long term future. John Gruden shows something, you know, prove that he learned the ways and he's apologetic and he's grown from this experience, which is the end goal, right? Like, there's, I think too often in our society, it's let's label this guy the bad person, scarlet letter, he's terrible forever. Like, no, the goal is people who screw up to learn from it and to come back and be in society. Look no further than Richie Incognito, right? His blow-ups, his problems, and now he's a leader on this team, and he's had no problems for half a decade. That's what you want. That's the goal. You want people to grow from these experiences, right? So that's the goal for John Gruden, is to come back, you know, rehabilitated or whatever word you want to use. But like Rory said, it's completely different. Deshaun Watson not being charged, not found guilty, just being accused, slapping his dick around, versus John Gruden.
Dude, he had his dick in everyone's face in Houston. Everyone in Houston, you could have had his dick in your face.
Allegedly. Right?
Allegedly.
John Gruden, it's like hard proof. And yeah. like Rory said, like, what's, you know, what's the market for a $10 million a year head coach who's maybe going to get you to 500, right? Versus someone like Deshaun Watson. And this is the other part. Like, the league wants Deshaun Watson playing. The NFL, Roger Goodell, wants Deshaun Watson in a helmet, in shoulder pads, making Sports Center every Sunday. Whereas the league doesn't like John Gruden. The league doesn't like the Raiders. The league doesn't like Mark Davis. Like, they're going to do everything. Like, Deshaun Watson, it was like the league begrudgingly said, okay, fine. We'll suspect, like, well, like, all right, okay, okay. All this evidence, we got to, like, do something about it. With John Gruden, they spent time going through 650,000 emails just to find four John Gruden ones and then slowly leak them to shaft him in the ass and ruin the and do their best to ruin the Raiders season and to embarrass Mark Davis. Completely different scenarios. The league wanted this to happen to John Gruden. The last thing the league wants is for star young before their prime quarterbacks to be yanked out because they're slapping their dicks around massage therapists.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Okay, again, two things here.
Allegedly is big.
The first thing is, you're talking about something criminal versus something that's like anti-societal. Right, just like hurting people's feelings and saying bad things, right? And I don't know if you saw the Dave Chappelle the latest comedy thing that he had, comedy special.
No, but I heard everyone who did watch it is a transphobe. So now I'm going to.
Yeah, that's what I heard. That's what I heard. No, he said that
you embarrassed his podcast by watching it
because he was talking about that rapper DaBaby who had shot and killed somebody in a Walmart, and it didn't hurt his career. But he said something against gay people or trans people, and that hurt his career. So it's like, you could commit a crime and kill somebody, and that's fine, but don't hurt somebody's feelings.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say that that's all that John Gruden did, but he was talking about something criminal versus something that's not criminal. And I think you're right about the league and their hypocrisy. They are pushing this narrative on their platforms, on ESPN. Everyone in ESPN, Stephen A. said it. Who killed fucking Mark Davis, basically, for the league didn't force the Texans right away after all these chicks were coming out and accusing Watson of doing all this shit. It took a long time for them to really kind of like nudge him to do something with him on the roster. Like, what are you going to do with him? Are you going to suspend him? What are you going to do? But when Mark Davis didn't act quickly enough for the NFL, they then released more stuff to kind of push his hand, and he was called a coward. He was Stephen A. Smith said that Mark Davis told on himself by not acting quickly and appropriately, and that if that he had all the emails, and if the second set of emails wasn't leaked, Mark Davis wouldn't have fired him and shit like that. So that's the narrative they're trying to push now, but they were doing the same thing. Or even worse, because they didn't really, I mean, make the Houston do anything. They kind of waited for Houston to do their own thing. But they were doing this something similar when you had, I mean, something that was ongoing. It wasn't like it was, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. So that's that kind of hit me a little, kind of pissed me off a little bit. Another reason why I put this on there today.
Key difference is coaches versus players. Like, name a good coach that's come back from you know, something crazy like this. Can you remember anyone in recent history that's a coach that they brought back from the dead after, you know, some sort of transgression?
I mean, Urban Meyer finger blasted some random chick who wasn't his wife. And perfect timing.
Allegedly. Oh, yeah.
So
I just watched a
great timing for the daughter to come in.
Hey,
for those of you who on podcast, not YouTube.
That was amazing.
Go get mommy. Go get mommy.
I can't really think of anyone. I can't think of any big coaches that have come back from that sort
of shit. Urban Meyer is probably the one that has probably done the most shit. Even what's his face from Ohio State, Tressel. Like, once he did his shit, like, he was gone. Like, he didn't coach anywhere else. I mean, he probably didn't have to. Just doing all his speaking engagements with his fucking sweater vest on. That fucking cheap fuck.
Tressel has to be the most boring head coach in all of college football history. Like, successful head coach. Like, there's no one more boring.
Dude, fucking Pryor and all the rest of those motherfuckers were selling their name for fucking tattoos and chains and all kinds of shit. And he's like, they're still good young men. Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Well, in all fairness to him, he was like, he was going against like the NCAA's brain dead rules, you know. Well,
you know what? I lied to the NCAA and they didn't do anything.
I will say one last thing.
NCAA makes the NFL look like, I don't know, Harvard, like a Mensa meeting. Like it's nuts.
Dude, Garrett didn't say anything to the NCAA, and they fucked USC for fucking, I don't know, 3 or 4 years worth of fucking scholarships. Like, oh, that just
USC was asking for it.
Fucking pain.
You know why no one fucking put sanctions on UCLA? Because nobody gives a fuck. That's why.
Because they don't cheat.
Because that's why they're shitty.
One last thing on Deshaun Watson. We'll be able to tell how much the league wants him back by whether or not they install a suspension that's, you know, like the size of this fucking suspension. If he does get traded, like, is it going to be a 4-game? Is it going to be an 8-game? Is it going to be a 10-game? Like, this is an open case right now, although it is all allegedly.
He hasn't been really charged with anything. Like,
no, not even really charged.
Can you suspend?
It's only a civil suit.
Can you only suspend a civil suit to the league?
It's a mess. All right. Well, the Raiders were quite successful on Sunday, defeating the Broncos 34-24, and it was not that close at all. So let's recap. The good, the bad, and the ugly. Week 6, Raiders over Broncos in Mile High, brand new coach with the scar, with the open wound of having your coach go through what he did, not even a week old, still went into Denver, bent over and smacked the donkeys.
Got them donkeys. The good. We're going to start with RJ's pleasure zone and Derek Carr.
Oh, this one hurts so bad. That's why you want to do Derek Carr first. You can get it over with. We don't have to ruminate on it.
I will do Derek Carr first, so bad. Second, third. I'd be his sloppy seconds, anything. He plays like this. 18 for 27, 341 yards. And the good is, a 12.6 average. That is amazing.
Best of his career, right? Yeah.
That usually if you're good if you're in double digits. That's good. So to be 12.6 average, that's fucking amazing.
That's the kind of passing that I think is perfect for our offensive line. Like if Derek Carr's throwing it 40 times a game and the defense is just like with the ears pulled back and going, like he's gonna be in a stretcher, right? It's like, okay. Yeah. 27 times a game, 30, like, and still getting 341 yards. That's a good number. That's a good number right there. He definitely, so my biggest concern going in was like Gruden and Carr have talked ad nauseum about the relationship. Oh, we predict each other's movements. We're best friends. We understand everything. We're neighbors, blah, 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 blah. Was that part of the offense for him? Like, was that part of what made this offense so special, at least specifically this year when Carr was, you know, leading the league in yards. Not so, according to Derek Carr. Take a listen.
I thought it was great. I thought he had a great flow of the game. He's
talking about
communication, his tone in the headset. You know, there's so many little things that matter, you know, especially for quarterbacks. You know, he was getting the plays into me so early, so I have time at the line of scrimmage to either go fast or, you know, I can push the tempo or I can – you know, trick them, you know, get, we got an offsides because Ollie's pushing the tempo and the headset and I can get the guys where I need to get them and stuff like that, you know?
Is it possible that Olsen's going to run a better offense than Gruden right now, right this second, right? Even though with everything going against him, you're not in your head already, Rory, with everything going against him, with Gruden being the orchestrator, the czar of the team, he like his fingerprints are on every part of the offense. and yet Olsen can come in on 5 days' notice and do better than Gruden and continue to do better throughout the course of this season and hopefully postseason.
I agree with that. The reason why I agree with that is John Gruden was such a control freak that now that we know the constraints that Derek Carr was working under, the reason why, and it was what I talked about in the postgame show, Gruden wants to beat defenses with the perfect play, right? So he's thinking of the perfect play to call as opposed to a concept where, Ole would throw out a couple of plays, a concept, and Carr can get to the line and he can see what he sees from the defense on that specific play, as opposed to picking from two plays that Gruden sends you. And Gruden wasn't using one of his best weapons to his advantage, which was Derek Carr's brain. And Derek Carr was picking, you know, the better of the two or a couple of plays that he was given, but he didn't have that freedom to change to different plays. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the bigger assets. Gruden would be a more as far as a play caller, I think always a better play caller. Gruden would be like a good offensive assistant to help design an offense, but maybe not in-game play calling.
I like him a lot. Based on this small sample size, I love him. We can dig into it, but honestly, guys, the major difference is it seemed like he was a lot more flexible with his game plan. It looked like
he scored 10 points in the first quarter. What?
Crazy. Absolutely crazy.
Our first two drives, 10 points. Like, what the fuck?
But it definitely wasn't a mistake. You know, single one of those plays was meant to happen that way. You know, there was a game plan, and it wasn't necessarily a script to see what the defense was doing. It was, all right, this offense can move the ball on anyone. Let's go fucking prove it. As opposed to, all right, let's kind of feel the fucking defense out for at least a drive and adjust from there, you know?
I drive my ass, dude. Like, five drives, 15 fucking plays in the script.
Yeah, and he set up plays in a much more nuanced fashion, in my opinion. Like, the thing with Gruden, he would run the same formation, and then he'd run different routes or a different choice route off of the same formation on back-to-back fucking plays and think that he's being some sort of offensive genius. Olsen was kind of setting it up over a quarter or over a half, where he'd call the same formation, same sort of play, same sort of concept, but then all of a sudden, Kenyon Drake would go on a wheel route.
Yeah.
Wheel route. There you go.
You see, you do say root, you fucking liar.
Goddamn Brit, aluminium. Wow. I'm on to you.
Shit.
Speaking of Kenyon Drake.
I can't believe that just happened.
Yeah, well, I can. That's how you talk.
You got me.
That's how you talk.
You talk that way.
Jesus.
Speaking of Kenyon Drake, he showed up. He's actually a Raider, and he plays football. Yeah, isn't
he's
that crazy?
Part of the good, too, man. Kenyon Drake, 6 touches, 73 total yards, and 2 touchdowns. That's fucking amazing. It's over 10 yards a touch, about what, 12 yards a touch. So excellent job for Drake. Denzel Perryman, man. What can you say about this fucking guy? 11 more tackles, leads the NFL in tackles, 6 solo, and a fumble recovery. Mm-hmm. So fucking great job, Denzel Perryman. Corey Littleton stepping up. Again, another double-digit day for him in tackles. 11 tackles, 7 solo, and a pass defense. And Nate Hobbs, the rookie coming up. 11 total tackles and 6 solo. So Hobbs showing up on the good. And on the defensive end, sticking with the defensive end, Max Crosby, from not recording a stat against the fucking Bears, he had 6 tackles, 2 solo, 3 sacks, 1 tackle for loss, 1 pass defense, 5 quarterback hits. That's how you come back strong.
And that's what we've been saying about Max Crosby, right, is those pressures – while it doesn't count as like a sack total, doesn't show up in, you know, on spreadsheets and stuff like that, he's constantly disrupting plays. He's constantly influencing the play. He's constantly being a part of the defense. And maybe it doesn't show up as a stat sheet, but those will come. And we're like, I'd be ecstatic if he was getting 3 sacks a game, right? Like if those pressures were turning into sacks every single time. Oh, gee, awesome. What? Boom. Oh, let me blow you, Max. But just because it's not, that doesn't mean he's silent, or that doesn't mean he's quiet. And it's more sustainable. Like those 3 sack games, like a lot of random players get those, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The really, really good players you can count on week in and week out are the ones with consistent pressure constantly disrupting. and those three set games will appear every now and then. I would much rather have a Max Crosby not getting big stats every now and then. As long as he's consistently pressuring, the big stats will come, and they normally come in waves.
Yeah. Did you have something on Max?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the way that the NFL traditionally measures the effectiveness of a defensive end is so antiquated. Like, sacks are obviously the big metric, but why are we not looking more at QB hurries and hits, especially hits? You know, a hit on a play is a meaningful metric. And I know there's plenty of services that do track this. Just so we're crystal clear, he leads the league right now in quarterback hits with 11. He has 25 hurries, which also leads the league. He has 43 total pressures, first in the NFL right now. I hate to quote PFF. You guys know I've got a love-hate relationship with PFF, but he's got the number one pass rush grade for whatever that's worth. But a 27.6% pass rush win rate, which is also first in the NFL. So regardless of his sack total, like, he's getting home. There's no doubt about it, and it's happening consistently, even if he doesn't get a sack from it. Just dominant.
Yeah, I mean, he's causing interceptions with his pressure. He's causing incompletions with his pressure. Like, he's doing what he's supposed to do as, you know, being a disruptive force in the backfield. Whether it turns into, again, I would love for it to turn to sacks. That's obviously the goal. That's the best possible scenario for Max Crosby. But instead, if he had to give me a choice of, like, all right, he's going to get a 3-sack game every 6 games, but not much else in between, or he's going to get consistent pressure every single game and lead the league in pressures. Give me the consistent pressure all day long and twice on Sunday, or in his case, 43 times on Sunday.
The doubters right now on Max Crosby is saying that he can only do it against subpar tackles. So that's something to look for, especially against the Eagles, because they got Lane Johnson at right tackle. Like, that's a stud, you know? Yeah, so it'd be interesting to see if it kind of drops off a little bit against Lane Johnson, or if he's able to keep that up. The only other one that he struggled with in this entire year was Slater from the Chargers, right? Like, he didn't have much of an impact. He's a great tackle. He's a great tackle. So we got to see if he can do it against the best in the league.
Yeah.
But he's been dominant.
Continue, Soto.
All right.
It's always nice when the good, the bad, and the ugly, and the good takes like 20 minutes.
Right.
You know, it was a good game.
The secondary had 3 interceptions. So great job on the secondary there.
Yeah. And that's the part of our defense that we didn't think we'd get a lot of, right? It's not a very aggressive defense. It's go back, no big plays. So to get a ton of turnovers is not our strength. So it's double, like, it's like extra good, because it's not generally it's always the goal, but it's not, we don't make sacrifices to get interceptions. We make sacrifices to keep big plays.
Dude, yeah, well, this is just a philosophical thing with Gus Bradley's defense. Holy shit, man. Pressure. Like, I, this is so crazy to me that we basically have last year's same cast except for Ngakoue, which is a big addition, but he hasn't necessarily set the world on fire. And then we've got kind of a mismatch of people at defensive tackle that we didn't necessarily know if they'd get interior pressure. One of the 3 interceptions on Sunday was a contested catch. The other 2 were overthrows. And Teddy Bridgewater is not known for being an inaccurate quarterback that gets flustered in the pocket. Like, he's pretty, you know, he's pretty efficient. He's pretty turnover conscious, but you could tell by the end of the game he was fucking flustered.
He's not a quarterback that can throw the ball 49 times a game. He's not that guy.
Yeah,
he throws 49 times a game. He's gonna throw some picks, and we got ahead early. We got, which we never do. We got ahead early, and so it's like, all right, now we need Bridgewater. Okay, you know, Bridgewater has to beat us now because we're up by 14 points. Not gonna do it. He's not gonna beat us. Throw 49 times. We're gonna get 3 picks.
He dropped back fucking 54 times. He got sacked 5 mm-hmm. times, and he threw the ball 49 times.
Yep,
that's
crazy.
That's way too much for Bridgewater. And my last good, although he didn't really fill up the stat sheet, and he maybe hasn't had the year that we expected from him, Foster Moreau contributing in different ways. He had a huge block on the goal line where we were just really killing the offensive line. Not being able to open up holes for the running backs in the goal line. Do you have those pictures, JR?
You send them to me. I didn't know how to get them onto this StreamYard. So everyone can use their imagination. Close your eyes, specifically
okay,
if you're driving.
Okay, so the play was a simple counter play. Mm-hmm. Foster Moreau was lined up on the right next to fucking Brandon fucking Parker. So the combo block was a double team on the defensive end with Parker and Moreau. And Moreau had the toughest block out of all of them. Simpson was pulling around and kicked out first color. And then the fuck's his name? God damn it. See, I'm fucking explaining this shit.
Colton Miller.
Yeah, Colton Miller had to pull around, and he pulled around it, and he went up into the hole, and he got the first color that he saw. So Moreau's job is to, the number one, keep his pad level low, which he did, and drive the defensive end into the defensive tackle so Parker can then reach him and push him further in. Once that's done, he then scrapes off and gets first color. He should reach him and keep him inside, but what happened is the middle linebacker scraped over the top and actually went outside, which you don't want to do on a counter play. Foster Moreau flipped his hips over and drove him out towards the sidelines and opened up a nice hole. Colton Miller ran right through it. Jacobs ran right behind him for a touchdown. It was untouched. Fucking beautiful. It was fucking beautiful.
Locked in.
The reason why that was such a really good block is when a defensive end feels that the double team, his main goal is to split that double team. Just get anything you can through there so you don't get pushed in. Once you get pushed in there, you're basically useless. You're not going to make the play. So if you keep occupying both of those blockers, the linebacker has got an easy play. Or the first caller, excuse me.
He blocks three fucking people.
Yeah,
he blocked three guys on that play. And yeah. All three blocks were fucking rock solid blocks.
Yeah.
And that was a tight end.
A backup tight end.
Backup tight end. And when he flipped his hips around.
With a French name.
Yeah. And ended up blocking the linebacker actually was blocked into a safety. Mm-hmm. That was it. There was no money to catch Jacobs. And if you have a chance to check out that play, it was Josh Jacobs' running play. Just check it out. It was a thing of beauty. And it shows the line and the tight end working in unison. And that's what it's a beautiful play. I used to play offensive line, and it was a great fucking block. And it was a great play by Moreau. Moreau made that play. Without Moreau doing that, the rest of the play doesn't work. So great job, Foster Moreau.
Who's better at blocking? You, Foster Moreau, or Brandon Parker? Because I know. I'm Leatherwood. I'm sorry. Because you said how you'd be better at tackle for the Raiders than Leatherwood. Would you be better than Foster Moreau?
I don't know.
Are you too humble to say that?
That was pretty fucking good. Yeah, that was pretty fucking good.
I think it's fair. I think it's fair to say Foster Moreau maybe is a better blocker than you in the NFL.
Maybe, possibly.
All right, give me the bad, the ugly.
All right,
hold on. Can we do Ruggs real quick? Can we give Ruggs some fucking love before we move off of the good? Like, he keeps fucking showing out. I'm convinced he's a complete wide receiver. Like, he made a tough contested catch on top of the typical bomb on the first drive. Mm-hmm. I'm so fucking excited about Ruggs' development this year because he looks like a stronger player. I don't know if you guys saw the mic'd up episode. Did you see the mic'd up?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see it, no.
You should check it out, man. It's interesting to see, like, what type of personality he is and if he's kind of developed and grown into, his character this year. And he still seems a little bit immature in certain things, but it was pretty telling when he caught that touchdown. Carr comes over and he says, "I've got you." And Carr goes, "I know you do. Great job." Like, it seems like there's some trust there this year, and Carr's happy to throw it up to him and give him a shot, which I think that's a beautiful fucking thing for our defense.
Like, Ruggs understands his role where he has to earn Carr's trust. Like, that's the order things go. And he's like, Okay, I'm going to do it. And I just did it.
Yeah, because that 40-yard one was a fucking duck. That thing was hung up there forever, and he went out and he beat the DB for it. Okay, unfortunately, we do have some bad. Josh Jacobs, 16 carries, 53 yards, 3.3. The reason why that's bad is because Drake had four rushes for 34 yards, 8.5 average. In the same line, and we saw that they were calling power and zone plays for each running back, because the play that Jacob scored a touchdown on was a power blocking scheme play. So
our all pro first round pick running back is looking at back to back seasons where he has
sub 4 yards per carry,
and not even like the best yards per carry on his own team. Devontae Booker had over a yard better yards per carry last season than Jacobs did.
Yeah, man. I mean, I did see some burst out of Jacobs this game, but it needs to translate in the field, man. It's to move forward to against some of these better teams. Like, we need our running game to really show up. And it's not all his fault. You know, there is some offensive line issues, but, dude, they blocked well. Drake had the same line, and he fucking had a quarter of the chances and damn near almost the same amount of yards.
Yep.
I really like a quote that he had today, though, guys. He said, "I felt fast. I haven't felt fast on a Wednesday in a long time."
He looked good. He looked quick.
Well, he was talking about practice this day. It seems like the toe and the ankle injuries done with. Like, he seems like he's got some burst. He's feeling
confident. Until the next one? See, that to me is even more telling. He's like, "This is the first time I felt good at this point in the season ever." Like, you're your third season, and you've never felt good before? It's like, I love you, Josh, but
yeah, his rookie season.
Better not pay him two seasons from now.
His rookie season, he led the league for running backs in yards after contact. So that was him just powering through tackles and just getting extra yards and dragging guys. And we saw a little bit of that, pushing piles and stuff. So hopefully he starts rounding back in and being more that Josh Jacobs we saw in his rookie season.
Well, this is the rookie of the year battle. Miles Sanders against Josh Jacobs. There was a lot of pissed off Eagle fans that thought Miles Sanders should have been the rookie of the year there, and obviously he shouldn't have been. Josh Jacobs was a clear favorite in our opinion.
Better year.
Yeah,
pissed off. I'll piss on him. What's next?
You got a Meek? Who put a Meek in there? Let's see it, Rory.
All right, Rory, let's hear it.
I mean, look, when he matched up against Mike Williams and had a day, that was one of the most impressive things I think any of us have seen. He's 5'8". Like, that's only a little bit taller than me, and he went up against a 6'4", 6'5", just absolute beast and fucking held his own. Mm-hmm. But in my opinion, over the last 2 weeks,
held his own. He held him to, like, one reception for, like, 5 yards? Yeah.
But, I mean, he showed great technique. He got his head turned. Like, he did all the things. It wasn't luck, you know? He played really fucking well. The last 2 weeks, last week he started kind of missing some tackles here and there, and obviously he gave up that touchdown to the much bigger-bodied receiver. I think it was the tight end. But this week, the big thing that stood out is he fucking missed some serious tackles, man.
He had a bad angle on one tackle, yeah.
Yeah, he was responsible for the edge on that long run of theirs that went up the right sideline, and he just blew his responsibility, and it was a bad missed tackle. It wasn't even fucking close. So we got to see more out of him.
I mean, to his credit, though, last week, the week before, he did hold Allen Robinson to 3 catches for about 30 yards. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's a big-ass receiver. That's a good receiver, too, and he did hold him in check. But, yeah, there's some things he needs to clean up. Again, when you're not used to being out in the field all the time, it's you have to learn to keep that concentration level up because it just takes one play where, you know, everything's blocked correctly. Everything's done, and it's your play. You got to make it, and they draw those up sometimes. Hey, the running back, you got to take care of the corner. Can you beat him? If you can beat him, it's 40 yards. If not, it's 4.
And the Raiders signed True Font this week, guys. So we brought in a little bit of cornerback help.
Thank God,
we need it. They're dropping like flies. All right, last one.
All righty. Unfortunately, there is some ugly. Mm-hmm. The Broncos rushed 23 times. For 112 yards, that's damn near 5 yards carry. That's going to be big going forward because the next couple of teams that we play, they rely heavily on the run, and they're better offensively when they run the ball well. So that's the good, the bad, and the ugly.
So this goes back to our great start that we had against the Broncos, where because we've been playing from behind every game, because we haven't done shit for the first quarter and a half, teams are able to just run their offense. And if it's a run-heavy offense, you can just run, right? The Broncos only rushed 23 times because they were behind the entire game. So if we can stop these slow starts, we can protect our terrible run defense by forcing teams like we did on Sunday. Teddy Bridgewater threw 49 times, right? That's never in any offensive coordinator's game plan to have Teddy Bridgewater, you know, taking 5-step drops over 50 times a game. Never in the game plan. But if we force him there, we can protect our terrible run defense. So it's like, you know, every element of football, all 53 players, offense, defense, special teams, everything's working in cohesion. These really, really slow starts are putting undue pressure on our defense, undue pressure on our run defense, which is then, of course, not letting our offense be on the field as often as possible. So it's all playing into each other. The fast starts are monumentally going to help us because it protects and it shields the worst part of our defense from itself. And that's the good, the bad, and the ugly. Joining us back once again, catch him at the silverandblackpride.com. Also, one half of the Tape Don't Lie podcast. Rory's favorite show to masturbate to, named Marcus Johnson, joining us now. How you doing, Marcus?
Good, guys. How you guys doing, man?
Awesome. 4-2.
Four and two. Yeah.
Great place to be.
Fuck you, Rory.
So the Raiders came off a week where John Gruden got torpedoed. New interim head coach, new offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. The emotions of not only losing your coach, but the emotions of, you know, Carl Nassib, the black players, whoever, who maybe took John Gruden's comments. They had to deal with that. Did they overcome all that in a heroic effort and display of team unity and love? Or did the Broncos just suck balls?
I think it was it was a little bit of them overcoming it with effort. I think the Broncos suck ass on offense. Yeah. I would say that they suck ass on offense, but you know, I was talking about this on my show too. I think the Broncos defense was so good that if they were bad, the Raiders would have put a 50 on them. So I think that they were good enough to keep them down to 30, because there were some plays that they just made plays like just because they're a good defense and they kind of, you know, could stop the Raiders at some points. But it was just like an onslaught, because more of it was because they had no idea what Greg Olsen was going to do. And yeah, he added a bunch of new stuff. So they really had no chance, to be honest. Because I mean, it was basically like playing in brand new team week one. They had no idea. And he was just, and Greg Olsen was just messing with them. So everything that you probably would have thought it was something different. So that's why they kind of just went in there and kind of bulldozed them. And that's why I kind of feel like it's going to be a little bit, you know, little bit of time before somebody figures out what Greg Olsen's trying to do. So
how different is Greg Olsen's offense to John Gruden's offense with the Raiders?
I think he's just more creative.
Okay.
I think he's more more modern, I would say. I would say he's a little bit more modern in his thought process of calling plays and how I call plays. Like you see, like Derek Carr talked about after the game, how Olsen was getting the plays in really quick, right? Mm-hmm. And so he can get to the line. And if you notice, I mean, they scored points really fast. It wasn't like the slow ball control type of thing. They wait till 1 second, you know, Derek Carr was checking the line and still getting the ball off with 10 seconds left. So they were scoring really fast. And they had a lot of more tempo too. So it was a little bit more modern offense, I would say. And then one thing that Olsen did that was really smart is that he would just run Gruden's like designs or his plays, but then add something to it. So you would think, okay, like, you know, Gruden's been running the same plays for years. So, you know, that's kind of, you know, this is the look. All right, 3-by-1, I'm probably going to get a choice route from Waller and then like an out route from something. But then, no, it's not a choice route. It's a out and up. And then you're like, oh, crap. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of like some of the stuff that he was doing. And that's what I'm saying. It's going to take a while for some people to pick up on that.
Well, yeah. Carr was saying that he got a play, but he had full autonomy to change into any play he wanted, as opposed to Gruden gives you a couple of plays and you pick from one of these two plays.
Yeah.
I mean, that's almost like Peyton Manning-esque, you know? Like he had a fucking Moore or Christensen was his offensive coordinators, and they would just like – throw out concepts and he would depict the play. And how can you game plan for that? How can you have a tendency? How can you get patterns when Carr's out there? I mean, I said earlier, Gruden is not using his best weapon offensively, which is Carr's brain and how he can process the information that he sees pre-snap.
Yeah. Yeah. And I agree with that. I think that's a good something to point out, because if Carr has more time to change plays, he doesn't have to rush to change plays either. So it's not like a rush. Because I'm telling you, they used to do the slow ball control. It didn't matter how, if they were down, if they were up, they were a slow ball control team. They had no rush. I mean, there's so many times, like in 2019, they're like down like 10, 15 points. You're like, what the hell are they doing? Like, why are they moving? The Bears game pissed me off because, I mean, they're down 17-3, whatever. Mm-hmm. And they did like an 8-minute drive. I'm like, bro, you're down 14-3. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, so you're not going to see that type of stuff from Olsen. I think that's kind of the difference. And I liked what he did with the run game too. He just kind of changed the whole run game itself. So I really liked that too.
I got a little wet over Foster Moreau's block on the goal line on the Jai Jacobs run. I talked about that for so long, and I'm like, broke it down like an offensive lineman. These guys are falling asleep. And I'm like, you guys don't understand how fucking dope that shit was. That's not easy. He got crossed by the linebacker. That's a no-no on a counter. You can't let the guy cross your face. And he flipped around, and, man, that was a nice drive. He opened that hole up nice. Great job by Foster Moreau.
I think passing on first down, play action on first down, there was a little bit more of a commitment to the run, but we don't know if that was because we were up pretty early in the game. I don't know if that was part of the game plan. But honestly, man, the play action on first down, we've been crying out for it for so long. You know, it's so obvious because Gruden's tendency was always to run on that first down. And I think that was a huge difference.
You know, and back to the run game, I thought they switched it up. They did a lot more counters. So, you know, they got John Simpson on the move, pulling a lot more. So you saw on the touchdown that, Soto was talking about, when he comes around, I mean, him and Colton Miller come around together. And then Foster Moreau is crossing their face. So then it creates a big hole. And then that team's never seen that before, right? So it's a lot of things like that. I mean, the play action on first down was a big one for me too. They did a lot of more play action on first down, a lot more passing. What I like too is that, you know, this team has been like a deep passing team all year. They've been, you know, dependent on the explosiveness. And they kind of got like a little redundant with it. So when the Chargers and the Bears came, they're like, okay, we're just going to drop back. And then, you know, Gruden really didn't adjust. So what I liked about this game too is that they made them come up a little bit. So if you notice in like the Ruggs one was kind of the main one that they did early on. But after that, they didn't really throw deep that much, right? They kind of set everything up. They ran a little bit. They ran a lot more than they usually do. And then it just was a barrage after that. Then you weren't ready. Then you came up and then like it's boom, 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 boom over your head. So I like the setup. It was, like I said, it's just modern. It was just more modern, I guess, right?
Well, that first pass, the first drive, the first pass told me a lot about that this was going to be a different offense.
Yeah.
Usually when Gruden, he doesn't like throwing on the first down, right? He's run, run, pass, right? If he would throw, it would be a deep shot. Like, oh, I'm just going to show you this. Dude, it was like a 5-yard little stop by Ruggs. Yeah. They're going to give him the cushion. What's the difference? You get a 5-yard little stop route or a 5-yard run. What's the fucking difference? That's just as good as a handoff. You use his speed. He gets 4 more yards. Now you have freaking 2nd and 1. So that right there, what Gruden would never have done that.
Yeah.
And it just showed that, and I said this in the postgame show as well, like Gruden seemed to attack defenses with specific play calls. It seems like Olsen and Carr are trying to get favorable matchups and exploiting the matchups as opposed to throwing a play at you and having the play make the play as well to the player.
Oh, 100%. I 100% agree with that. It basically kind of just set, like I said, it's everything's a setup. You mean like the Kenyon Drake touchdown was set up on the first play of that drive. I mean, there's a halfback choice, a little out route, and then the guy bit on it, right? And then next thing you know, and later on the drive, it's the same look, but oh, he's going up now, and then it's a touchdown. So like that's building on plays, man. And you know, we just weren't seeing stuff like that.
That was sad, man. That linebacker didn't even know the ball was in the air, and then he's looking, he's like, whoa, Drake's back there, what the fuck? And he was gone.
That was a beautiful ball, too. Yes, like the perfect touch, just floated in stride. Oh, it was pretty.
It really was. Can I just say the announcer, by the way? Did you guys catch that? The announcer was like, yeah, it's kind of a shitty pass. What?
What
the fuck are you watching?
What?
Crazy.
It's kind of weird, though, right? Like, because we're talking about, like, oh, my God, this offense improved so much. It's like Carr led the league in yards after 3 weeks. Like, this offense was playing lights out, like unbelievable after 3 weeks. And we're like, oh, it's so much better now. Gruden was holding us back. How, like, explain that to me, Marcus. Like, was Gruden holding us back? Is it different and better or just different and different? Is this sustainable? Is it just, oh, Olsen's in there, it's a weird curveball for a shitty team,
it'll
come back to earth? Like, what do you make of this whole situation without Gruden and with Olsen now?
I think Gruden, his personnel that he built kind of outgrew him. I think, like, when you add, like, Henry Ruggs and you add Bryan Edwards, it's obviously a deep threat. I mean, he didn't come in the league as a deep threat, but I mean, he's obviously a deep threat at this point to us, right? So his personnel kind of outgrew him, and Gruden doesn't have that many like deep concepts. So what we saw was basically the same ones over and over and over and over again. Yeah. And like, you know, and teams started to catch on. So like by the time we got to week four and week five, I mean, you have the same tape on, you run the same wheel and post over and over again, wheel and post, and then wheel and post, and then four verticals. And then, yeah, it seems like, okay, if Henry Ruggs comes on he's coming on a jet motion, they're probably going to run four verticals. We know that's what's going to happen. What kind of, I feel like happened to him. I think the personnel kind of outgrew him, where he had to start throwing deep more, and he never was a deep guy. I mean, even when he big, you know, his first time here, I mean, that was kind of the you know, the gripe that a lot of Raiders fans had with him, that he didn't throw deep. So that's just something that he just doesn't have in him to have a lot of deep passing concepts. So when you have Henry Ruggs, who's obviously grown and he's ready to take that next step, you can't get him open because you don't have the concepts for it.
It's funny because Soto always said that it's Derek Carr's fault for not going deep. Like, he always blamed Derek Carr because he hates Derek Carr. But you're telling me it's screwed. I don't know, because you're really smart, Soto, but I know Marcus is smart too. So I don't know what to make here. It's very confusing, Soto, that you always said it was Carr's fault. Marcus is saying that the play design was, I don't know what to think here. It's like seeing dad after he shaved his beard with you, Soto. I don't recognize you.
Yeah.
Please. I cleared it up for you. So I never said throwing deep. I say push the ball down the field. Like, you could push the ball down the field without throwing 20, 25 yards down the field.
That's very true.
What I said was there were guys open down the field that Carr wouldn't look at. After his initial receiver was covered, he would just then check down. What he's doing this year is he's starting deep and then progressing back to a check down, as opposed to going to the check down first and not even looking deep.
So that's
the difference. And as far as Bryan Edwards goes, do you guys know that he was the third fastest ball carrier in the league last week? 21 miles an hour. He's not our speed guy. At South Carolina, he was the jump ball guy. He wasn't a speed guy. And it's like, if not our speed guy can be the third fastest ball carrier any given week in the NFL, like, shit, man, that guy's going to be some problem when he gets it all together.
Yeah. And I agree with what Soto's saying, because I think the difference between Carr this year and last year is that he's anticipating like crazy. Like, it's like a natural thing at this point. So, which was something that we haven't seen from him in a really long time. And, you know, you can't hit tight windows. You can't hit the intermediate part of the game if you're late. Right. So he's a smart guy. He knows when he's late, so he's going to check it down. But now he's not being late, so he's throwing the ball early enough to, you know, get those passes off. I mean, the one play that, you know, showed me that the most when against the Dolphins, when Darren Waller is 3rd and 13, and he throws like a 29-yard pass, and Darren Waller was not open, but the window was. So he threw it to the window, and Darren Waller got there, and 29 yards, 3rd and 13 conversion. So that's the big difference between him this year and years before. Even though he kind of came back to life a little bit last week, but I think he was trying too much to be aggressive. So he's passing up some things that maybe he would have took before, and he was throwing too deep a little too much. And, you know, the deep ball is like a 3-point shot. So if you're like, you know, sometimes Steph Curry's going to go 1 for 10, sometimes Derek Carr, even though he's a good deep ball thrower, he's going to go 1 for 8. It's just the way it is with deep ball. So anyways.
About Darren Waller, you know, he came in, you know, 19 targets in the first week. Right. It's like, all right, this is our, it was like, okay, that's our offense. And I'm fine with it. Darren Waller, throw it to him 30 times a game. Like, until you stop it, we'll throw to Darren Waller every single time. Right. 19 targets out of the gate, only 34 in the 5 games since. Is there a regression in Darren Waller, or is this just kind of the offense is just not going to be revolving around him like it used to?
Well, I think one of them, I mean, Henry Ruggs has stepped up a lot. I think Henry Ruggs, him and Carr have a little bit of a connection. I think they're a little bit, you know, I think they're a little closer than, you know, they've been joking around like the past week, couple weeks. I don't know. Out of Gruden left, and now they're best friends. I don't know what that's about. But it's weird, right? I don't think
Derek doesn't like to be single very long.
I guess not. But I think
they're monogamist.
Yeah,
he stacks them up like hoecakes, bro. He just stacks them up. You eat the top one, and there's a new top one. You know what I'm saying?
So, because they have a little bit of a thing where, like, Carr feels like he can just throw it up to him and Ruggs is going to make a play for him.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And he anticipates a lot with Ruggs more than he does with other players. But I think what's happening with Darren Waller is he has to chip block a lot. And so we're seeing him getting taken out of the game because we don't have a right tackle. So he's having the chip block, and he's got the little check down route. And, you know, Carr's not checking down this year, so he's just kind of out of the game. And then he's like, you know, it's happening over and over again. And, you know, it's not something that is going to help this team unless they fix the right tackle. So that's why you see, like, DJ Fluker come in. So they probably have that thought process. Because, one, Darren Waller's not getting double teamed anymore now. So we're going into week 7, and nobody's double teaming him anymore. So that's kind of been taken away. There's no brackets. There's no, like, so that's why it is time to get him back in the game. And that's why we saw, like, him on the post route. Like, he was one-on-one. Like, that would not have happened in week 2. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
So that has opened him up that way. So hopefully going forward, we still see some more from him. But they got to fix that right tackle spot, or he's got to keep chip blocking. And then he's going to have to be a little check down guy. And it took him Renfro out of the game a lot of this week, too, because he had the chip block, too. And because they were really chip blocking this week. It wasn't like the weeks before. They were chip blocking Von Miller like crazy.
Well, yeah, I would say is Von Miller had no idea where it came from. It was either a wide receiver motioning down, it was the back, or it was a tight end. And sometimes they would just run right past him. And he's like, oh, shit, I thought he was going to chip me. And then another guy gets him. It's like, it was genius how they did it.
Yeah. So
it was masterful. It was legit masterful.
Which one of y'all kicked me? One of those things.
A couple of crazy stats just to highlight.
Yeah.
Especially since we have such a, you know, an offensive line that really struggles with pass blocking, especially on the right side. So Ruggs is averaging 22.25 yards per catch, best in the league among players with double-digit catches. Bryan Edwards, surprisingly, is averaging 20.2 yards per catch, third in the league. And then Derek Carr on throws of 20-plus yards or more is currently tied for first in the league with 18 completions, is first in the league on his own for 603 yards, and has whatever PFF would quantify as a big-time throw, is first in the league on big-time throws as well.
Same thing, Marcus. PFF.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever, right? Whatever that means.
Just use the stats. Don't use some of the other stats.
Yeah, exactly. It's with a
He's fourth in big dick throws. Like, it's really a throw special. Like, it's the big dick throws, two C's, fourth. Big dick, you know? Yeah. Just behind Nick Foles, who's 1, 2, and 3. You know what I mean?
Big dick, getting it done.
The fucking narrative is that we can't protect the passer, but he's having the best year of his career in terms of throwing deep, which is it's masterful.
Yeah, but that's what I was talking about. I think they got a little too crazy with it. I think this week it was more timely. I think that's what it has to be. Yeah, you're a deep passing team, but you just can't come out and just four verts and then four verts. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not going to work. So that's why you saw the first 3 weeks. Yeah, that was working because, you know, people probably were like, okay, there's Derek Carr, short passing team, John Gruden. They don't throw deep a lot. And then you're getting killed over the top. And then here come the Chargers and here come the Bears. And they're like, you're not going to do that. And they didn't adjust. And then we saw a little bit of an adjustment this week. So I think they want to attack. They're going to keep attacking. They're going to keep trying to throw the ball deep. But I think it's going to be more calculated now. It's going to be more calculated.
The word I used was their offenses is more fluid now.
Yeah.
It's more fluid. They're still going to attack, but they're not going to be stubborn like the old regime and just keep running the same shit over and over and over again, hoping that, you know, well, this play is going to work. I'll draw it up this way. And, you know, they ran a lot out of passing formations, too, which is going to help. I know that the offensive line hasn't really been all that great run blocking, but, you know, just fooling the defense into thinking, hey, we're going to pass this play, and, you know, you get a running back coming at you. Any little bit helps.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it was just a way better performance, man. But, you know, back to what you say, RJ, you asked, like, what it's going to look like going forward. And that's what I was saying earlier. Like, I don't know if teams are going to be able to catch on quickly, especially until, like, maybe like week 12. You probably find a team that's going to be like, okay, there's enough tape out there to figure out what Greg Olsen is going to do. But then Olsen might just go back, start doing the old stuff. So that, you know, that's kind of what I liked about what he's doing. It makes teams think about something else, but then they can come back and go back to the old stuff once teams start thinking about the new stuff. So that I think that's kind of the adjustment itself.
We should just fire our coach every 6 games. Just keep everybody guessing. Just constant circular. Just nobody knows. Just go.
Just
cycling, you know?
Yeah, just change OCs like every 6
every
weeks.
Time. No one will know what's coming, right?
We'll just make some more emails.
So we're recording this Wednesday night. So I don't know if you've done your Eagles tape study yet, but obviously Eagles coming up on Sunday, leading into the bye week. 2-4 Eagles, We're moving into kind of the soft-ish part of our schedule. This could be a really great spot for us. Again, I don't know how much you've had a chance to research.
I hate saying that, dude.
But it's true. What do you see us offensively being able to take advantage of the Eagles defensively?
I think the Eagles are they're just like a team that's kind of like us. They just play too high. They really don't do anything super creative. Mm-hmm. So since they don't do anything super creative, that's why I expect the Raiders to be able to move the football on them. And I don't know about how many big plays they're going to get on them. I think they'll figure out a way to do that. But I think early on, I think this would be the type of game to see more Darren Waller, because they don't have any linebackers. They don't have any linebackers. Their safeties are cool. I mean, they're all right. But I think their best players are on the defensive line and their corners. So, I mean, Darius Slay is no joke. I mean, he's not Darius Slay from 2017, but he's still Darius Slay. Right, that's like we have Casey Hayward. He's not Casey Hayward in 2017. He's still Casey Hayward.
He's still damn good, yeah.
Maybe he's better. Like, dude, he's shutting everyone down.
Like, I know, but you know what I mean. But Darius Slay is the same way. So Darius Slay, he's going to give those receivers everything they got, and they're going to have a little bit of a deal with outside. But I mean, that's what you hit the inside. It takes a lot of Renfro to be a lot of zone against them. I think Greg Olsen is pretty good against zone too from his history. So we're going to see a lot more concepts kind of open up, and hit those linebackers in between it and kind of do more things like that. I'm not, because the Eagles on offense are not anything to be like scared of.
Yeah.
So that's why I kind of feel good about this game, because I don't think they're going to be able to score points. And I think this offense is going to be a lot better than it was before. And they'll be able to, move the football. And then, the Eagles are a pass first team with running back type of players. So
they really don't have an identity. Like, they're kind of stuck in the middle.
I don't know what their identity is. I think they came into the season thinking Jalen Hurts is a pocket passer, because he's really good. He's a really good guy on the board. He can fool you in the summer. He could go in there and practice. He could put right on the board. He's a smart guy. He could pick things up. But once you start, the bullets start firing for real, and you really got to hang in the pocket, he's bailing. So
yeah, he's happy feet.
Yeah, he's got happy feet. He's bailing. So I think that's going to be something good for the Raiders. They're going to be able to stop them a lot, I think. And I think the offense will be able to move the football on them, but we'll see. I mean, it's all about them showing up. But I think that, some of it, I always feel like we're bashing on Gruden since he left, but it is what it is. But I think the little bit of the show is gone, right? So, I mean, you heard Jacobs say some comments about that, basically, like the guy yelling, trying to make TV, all the type of stuff. The show is gone, so that's why I expect the team to be a little bit more prepared and ready to go. Because there's not so much bull crap going on and no quotables and whatever. So we'll see. We'll see though. They just got to show up. I mean, they're still the Raiders. So
right.
Yeah, we'll see, man. That's why I say don't count your dubs too early, guys.
You can hype up the Raiders for 45 minutes and how great they are. Greg Olsen's going nuts. Darren Waller's the man. Derek Kerr, super smart. Just end it with, yeah, but they're still the Raiders.
Raiders.
Right? At home as right? well. Like,
you're right. Wait till we're 6-3, and then what's going to happen, right?
It's like, I don't know. Yeah, man. So
we got to perform at home, man. It's about time Allegiant kind of reclaims its place as our home stadium as opposed to the fucking away fans. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, we've got to perform at home, and we can't have penalties stopping the momentum, stopping the crowd noise, all that sort of shit has to end.
Yeah.
It needs to be a statement.
Yeah, it's tough though in Vegas, man. I mean, those people came out of nowhere. They come from everywhere. That's like their vacation. That's from Philly. People from, I've never been to Vegas. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. Like, you're looking at away games for your, if you're like the Cleveland Browns and you're just like, oh shit, we're in Vegas. Like, circle that one on the calendar. I'll pick $400 for those tickets. Nah, no problem. It's a vacation. No big deal.
Exactly.
Soto and Rory are like donating kidneys, trying to get a decent seat to go to our own team.
Yeah.
Imagine the street fights this week in Vegas. Fucking Philly fans out there.
I don't know, man. These Vegas fans are soft, bro. I went to one of those games, man. They're soft, bro. I don't know, bro. I didn't hear any Raiders chants after the Dolphins game. I was upset.
Oh, man.
They're new.
Whoa.
They're new. They're not used to it. You know what I mean?
Step it up, let Vegas. Step it up.
There's got to be one guy like in a Dolphins fan's face screaming Raiders. At least one guy, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
oh, that one dude. Yeah, he was from Oakland, though.
I'm sure you guys had people at the Broncos game in Denver. Apparently, there was fights galore in the stands. There was apparently a ton of fights.
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's different, though. You know,
we're still going to have our away presence. In fact, probably even more now that like all these Bay Area fans like they can't just like take the BART to the game anymore. They're like, fuck that. I'm going to Denver. I'm going to beat somebody up like Randy Marsh from South Park, like training for a little league kids little league game. Rocky soundtracks in the background.
Yeah,
dude. I went to a Chiefs game in December. It was years ago, like early 2000s.
Yeah,
and I had to fight my way out of there, dude. Like literally close your eyes and like Lisa Simpson windmill your arms and just try to bust through and get out of there. Like the zombie apocalypse. If you stop, you're dead. You gotta keep moving.
Yeah.
Women, kids, just head down.
Them.
Just
fuck them. Stay out of my way. I'm not hard to miss. You better fucking see me coming because you're gonna get rolled over.
Because Mr. Calm, Cool, and Collected Soto was the victim, I'm sure, in that situation. He's like, oh no. All he did was stab three guys in a Chiefs jersey, and they came after me. What a bunch of jerks. I can't believe these guys.
Allegedly.
All right, make sure you check him out on the silverandbackpride.com and, of course, the Tape Don't Lie podcast. Rory, I think, finds that on Pornhub. His name's Marcus Johnson, one of the best in the business. Thanks for coming on, Marcus.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate you guys.
All right, thank you, Marcus. That was awesome. Appreciate it. So here's something that it's been kind of I've been thinking about as I lay in bed late at night by myself, unable to sleep because I have a 2-year-old that
is
also
Rory's
refuses
butthole?
To sleep. No, I sleep fine in there. No problem.
plenty of room.
This is something I'm thinking about, like the quality of our team unity. And so often it's such a like jerk off topic to talk about. It's, oh, we love each other. It's so great. It's like, no, like it only matters like who your team, like who your players are, how well you play. Like that's what matters. This whole like, oh, the team's great, blah, blah, blah. It's just like circle jerk nonsense. Not really true. Especially in a team like this, in the situation that we were in with John Gruden, who again, not just a head coach, not just the mastermind of the offense, but the czar of the Raiders. GM. He had Mark Davis's ear on anything he wanted. The color of the curtains in the locker room, he could pick. Like, he is in charge of everything, and now he's gone. And not just gone, but gone where, you know, homophobic comments when you have the only openly gay player in the NFL, racist comments when you have a locker room full of black players. Like, all these things can tear locker rooms apart. We've seen far less tear locker rooms apart. We've seen quarterbacks that are divas drag locker rooms through the mud, right? Not so with the Raiders. Here's Henry Ruggs earlier this week on everything that happened with John Gruden playing with
them. I mean, we're a team, so pretty much we just came together. Trying to find the right way to say this, but as the team, it's really not about anybody else but us. So as long as, you know, we're together, you know, we got to go on the field 11 at a time. So as long as everybody in our locker room is together and on the same page, no matter what, we can make some things happen.
And this is the speedster wide receiver, right? Like, this is generally the stereotypical loudmouth, all about me player on the team, right? The Terrell Owens, Ocho Cinco, like this fast, badass, awesome receivers, generally the me, screw the team guy. Henry Ruggs, opposite. Here's Derek Carr in the exact same thing.
Again, no, there'll be a time for the emotions of all of that, but now's not the time. You know, we have time. If anything, what this did is brought us really – it. For sure, brought us closer with talking with the guys and meetings and all that kind of stuff. Proud of where we're at and glad for our organization to get a win. You know, we needed a win bad this week. You know, sometimes when you get punched in the gut, it's hard to bounce back, but we were able to do it. So we definitely needed it. We got one, and it definitely feels good.
When you have a workplace that you go into and you're worried about your job, you're worried about people backbiting, cortisol is pumping through your veins, you're nervous, you're angry, you're always looking over your shoulder, you can't survive, whether it's an NFL locker room, whether it's a law firm, whether it's a school room, like a podcast. If you're in that environment, you can't function. The Raiders have the opposite. The Raiders clearly have, despite all the dysfunction with the front office, team president gone, the coach now gone, like all the dysfunction that we hear about that's going on with the Raiders, that locker room is a sacred place. And it's running perfectly at the helm with Derek Carr as an example. and a rest and a team just full of people who are team first, team first, team first, believe in each other, love each other, and let's succeed. And this team is way overplaying the talent of their roster because that's what's happening.
I agree they're playing well and they're playing together. I don't know that they're definitely playing well above the talent on their roster. I think they have a talented roster. And I think that
how talented? Let's think about this for a minute. How many players are top 10 at their position on the Raiders?
Currently.
Waller, Max, our punter.
Perriman's
Perriman leads the
Perriman.
AC Hayward's lights out right now.
Hayward.
Carr is definitely lights out right now. He's for sure top 10.
Is he top 10?
100% right now. This is top. This is
Soto. Soto is Derek Carr top 10 quarterback.
This incarnation of Carr, yes. Right now, yes.
100%.
Yeah. So six players?
I'd say a healthy Josh Jacobs is top 10. I think Ingold, you can make the comment that Ingold's top 10.
There's not even 10 fullbacks in the NFL.
I mean, he's top 10. How do you define talent? When you look at talent for me, that means, you know, look at our first round picks. Look at our, like, the likes of Corey Littleton that might be underperforming, but we know he's got fucking talent. He's done it in the past. I look at the roster and I see a lack of productivity and consistency. I don't see a lack of fucking talent.
I agree with that.
Personally.
But I think what's driving this team the most and holding it together through all this is the life experience of the players, right? So, like, look at, like, the leaders of this team.
And Darren Carr's Waller. Medium white shirt, that tight size medium shirt he was wearing.
Now he looked sharp. He looked sharp. That normally he's got like the just. I'm just amazed he had sleeves on.
That wasn't like, a pro club. Enough. That wasn't a pro club t-shirt from the 5 for 10. That
yeah, was I was a like
nice little stretchy.
I was straight shirt, up like Carr. I noticed you're wearing sleeves. Is everything okay?
They were pushed up though. Yeah, they were pushed up a little bit.
They were in Denver. Maybe it was a little cold, so we had to have a short sleeve shirt on. But like,
let me say this about Carr real quick, because like Soto, I'm, you know, towards the end of the season, I'm the first to jump on the fuck Carr train, basically.
You're second behind Soto.
I think that he's taken a real step up in terms of his leadership this year, not just in the fucking press conferences, which, you know, we get to the end of the year and we can barely watch his press conferences because it's the same shit. It's almost cringy. Mm-hmm. It seems like I really like the mic'd up episodes because you can kind of see what they're like on the sideline. And he's been so fucking calm this year. You know, like his demeanor is just, it seems like he's really taken it's gone down a notch across the board, not just because Gruden's out, but like his leadership is very much so lead by example. He's not getting too worked up at all. And it's, you know, you can see the team responding really well to it. And yeah. I will say this about Gruden and Mayock and how they've drafted in the last fucking 4 years of whatever the fuck. One of the big things is that they always do draft high character guys. And I think that that is finally starting to pay dividends in moments like this, where none of them are getting, you know, fucked up by what's going on in the last couple of weeks. They've got their head down. They're focused on the game. And the level of execution against the Broncos was better than we've seen.
Years.
I didn't even know. All year. Yeah. I mean, everyone was making the plays when the play was there to be made. And that's the exact opposite of what we had with the Bears, with drops from everyone, with fucking penalties from everyone.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing to look at moving forward. And if we do, I don't even want to fucking say it, but later on in the year, if we start to go through some challenges, it'd be interesting to compare Carr from right now, not only in terms of his stats, but also his demeanor on the field towards the end of the year.
Well, just look at the life experience of the main players on our team. Like Darren Waller, addict, barely in the league, practice squad, got his life together.
Wait, he was an addict?
Yeah, you didn't hear about that? That one time they mentioned it on a broadcast?
Oh, the one time they mentioned it every 5 minutes?
Or the podcast that he has, that's what's all about. Max Crosby, same thing. Like, he was in rehab, got his life back together. Richie Incognito had to come back from basically a nervous breakdown, like a mental breakdown, and now a leader on the team. Carl Nassib, right? First openly gay player, and, you know, he has that on his shoulder. Josh Jacobs, we've heard a million times.
Homeless fucking.
Homeless guy. Like, these are... For like 25-year-old dudes, like they've lived. Like they've lived some life, some of these players. These aren't just like, oh, you know, I can take on the world. Just give me a couple shots and a pitcher of beer and I'm bulletproof because I'm 23, right? Like the three of us were. Like these are guys who have seen some shit. And I think that level of maturity is a big reason why this team is so good and so team first. Like the name on the front's more important than the name on the back type of team. And that's And that's not just a feel good story. Like, we're an AYSO soccer team. Like, this is, that has genuine, true dividends. Like, you ask people who are part of that Eagles Super Bowl team from a few seasons ago, that wasn't a overly talented team. Like, that wasn't, you know, just loaded with Pro Bowlers and insane, but it was a team that was bound together. And it was a team that knew how to play 53 players as one cohesive unit. And that's what we have going for us in Las Vegas now.
I can agree with that.
Real quick, if the playoffs started now, this is what it would look like. We're in. All right. It's always fun to play this game. We're like, oh, it doesn't matter. Yeah, but it's a lot of fun. So we're going to do it anyway. Playoffs started now. Baltimore number one, Chargers number two, Tennessee with the tiebreaker over Buffalo, 3-4. The three wild cards, so there's three wild cards now. Cincinnati, Las Vegas, Denver. Outside looking in, maybe could potentially change. Kansas City out. Three AFC West teams in, Kansas City not. That's not going to stay very long, but still. Cleveland,
you never know, man.
A lot of people are high on Cleveland, and who knows what goes on with New England. I can see the seven shuffling a lot. The Broncos are out. They're not going to make it. They're trash.
No way.
They're just leaning on the fact that they won the first three games.
I'm pretty confident teams.
Against terrible, like literally the three worst teams in football. I can't see Kansas City floundering this long. I don't see Tennessee doing like having a good record, but they'll win the AFC South. Like they could win that division with like nine wins, right? So I think Tennessee as the four seed's a no-brainer. I think Kansas City in the mix is a no-brainer. Other than that, this looks, you know, this looks like what I think the playoffs are pretty similar going to look like when January rolls around.
I don't think the Chargers will be that high. I think they got kind of a little bit exposed. I mean, we played a terrible fucking first half. We scored nothing in the first half, and we still kept it close. A very bad game for us, and we kept it close. So, I mean, we'll see. We'll see if Herbert can keep it up, man. He's a very talented kid, but it's hard for these young quarterbacks to sustain that over a course of an entire year when you get more tape on them.
Yeah, they're kind of a pretender, honestly. Like, I don't know if they're necessarily a complete team yet with a second-year quarterback. He's ridiculously talented, but as you said it, man, they kind of got exposed against Baltimore. How fucking sweet is it, by the way, that we beat Baltimore?
The only team. The only team. Brilliant.
So Week sweet. One.
Yep.
Kansas City, you kind of get the impression that they're just trying to figure out what does and doesn't work in their playbook. They're just throwing up turnovers. They don't really give a fuck right now. They know they're going to be in and amongst it at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. Cleveland, they were everyone's darling this year, right? They were supposed to go all the way. They've got an insanely talented team, but Baker Mayfield's got a serious shoulder problem.
Yeah, his arm is hanging off his body, dude. That's a bad, bad, bad injury.
It is. That's not a good injury at all. Pittsburgh looked fucking terrible with Big Ben. He seems like he's going to cap how far they can go. New England, for the first time, and I don't even know how long, are no longer a formidable opponent, really. Colts, Jets, we're pretty much done at that point. So realistically, we should be in and amongst it for the AFC. We should be.
I mean, Indy has a shot to turn it around. They've played a lot better the last couple of weeks.
I just don't see a wild card team coming from the South. I just don't see a wild card team coming from the South. Like, I think it's only, you know, it's Tennessee or Indy are going to have 9 or 10 wins, and then that's it. Like, yep, who's ever second isn't going to make it in. I don't think.
I can see that.
You know.
All right. So let's look ahead to Philly. We got the Birds coming to town. Afternoon window, home game in Las Vegas. Last time I checked, Raiders were -3 point favorites.
Yep.
It could be even higher by the time kickoff rolls around with all the love that the Raiders get and they're a very, very large fan base. We heard the breakdown earlier of Marcus Johnson on that. He doesn't seem to be very confident in the Eagles doing a whole lot for to beat the Raiders. Anything about their game concern you guys?
I mean, dude, -3, that's basically a pickup game, a pick'em game on a neutral site. So that's a little bit weird at 2-4. But honestly, I watched the tape on Philly. They, like I said with Marcus, they don't have an identity. They should be a run first team, because Miles Sanders is that good and they have a good offensive line, but they're not. They're really not giving them a lot of chances. It's just weird how they're still trying to find their identity. So they're a team without an identity. If they really push the ball and run the ball a lot and give Jalen Hurts some favorable, second and third downs, they can do a lot better offensively. But as of right now, they're just floundering offensively. Sometimes, Jalen Hurts has 350 yards. Sometimes he has under 200 and three picks. It depends on if you're leaving it all to Jalen Hurts, he's not going to be the guy that's going to be able to win the game for you.
Right.
It's just not the way it works with that team. And they've been kind of doing that a little bit more. He's the leading rusher on the team too.
Yeah.
Jalen Hurts is.
Which is crazy.
Yeah. It's weird. That's how much they're passing is that his scrambling has made them the leading rusher on the team after six games. They're ranked 23rd in defense. They give up 29 points per game at home, only 21 on the road. And maybe depending on who they played on the road, maybe they played teams that weren't as good on the road. But as for as good as their defensive line is, they only have 11 sacks. They're 21st in the NFL in sacks. The top 11, 10, 11, 5 interceptions, okay. But they're 28th against the run. They give up we're better against the run than Philly is.
That's embarrassing.
And that goes to their linebacking core not being all that great. They're giving up 135 yards a game on the ground. So if we want to get right on a running game, this week is the week to do it. My three big keys, and you guys can talk about these. Number one, bottle up Miles Sanders. We can't let him go off the way we've let other running backs go off in the past. The Austin Ecklers, Jonathan Taylors, all those kind of guys, we can't let them go off. Keep the lid on the passing game. So Devontae Smith, the only way he's really going to hurt you is deep. Keep a lid on that the way we've been doing with the other teams and keep everything in front of you. Third is pressure Hurts in the pocket, or pressure Hurts, but keep him in the pocket. He's going to be a lot more dangerous running and creating plays that way than if you keep him in the pocket. He's not nearly as talented as Lamar Jackson, but a similar concept. You don't want to pressure him, but keep him in the pocket.
So about the Phillies defense, real quick, Rory, ranked not great, but look at the offenses they played. They played the Falcons, Cowboys. The Cowboys put up 41. Chiefs put up 42. Yeah. Bucks put up 28. So I'm not so quick to say that their defense is just going to get ran over by us.
Because, right.
Yeah, they've got bad, they've got bad stats, but they've played three of the five best offenses in football in the first six weeks. So there's still so what that tells me is if the Raiders can put up what, the Bucs, Chiefs, Cowboys, whoever did, then we've got something really good going.
Mm-hmm. I think if we get high 20s, I think we win the game. Miles Sanders, the crazy thing is about Miles Sanders, he's still as effective as he always is. He's getting 9.5 carries a game. Is that about? That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy. The offensive coordinator actually came out and said something this week. I think it was basically along the lines of they've got to get him going. So on the road, trying to help out the quarterback, you'd expect them to run the ball a lot, especially knowing that, in terms of our defense as well, it's not necessarily a strong point. The Broncos had some success. The Bears had success, even with Montgomery out. That should be their game plan, right? Should be.
Should be.
Should be. I mean, it seems pretty fucking obvious. So we got to stop the run. I agree with that. I will also say Jalen Hurts is not he doesn't look like a good quarterback, honestly. It definitely not a good pocket passer, but he is a dual threat, right? So we have kind of seen running quarterbacks hurt us up the middle. It seems like an easy fix, just keep someone in spy. And then the other big thing on offense versus our defense that worries me a little bit is that what we spoke about earlier, like Lane Johnson against Max, we really need a big day against with Ngakoue on the other side. And then in terms of the interior pressure, because a lot of the sacks that we saw against Denver were, you saw the edges get around the edge, but then ultimately Teddy Bridgewater had nowhere to go because we had some sort of interior penetration, We're playing against Jason Kelce, who's still one of the better centers in the league. So Quinnen Jefferson, Solomon Thomas, are they still going to be able to get penetration up the middle? Hopefully. Ultimately, I agree with what Marcus said. I don't know if they can put up enough points against us on paper. And then, look, Carr and this offense was I'm really excited about it, man. And I don't know if their defense is any better than the Broncos defense we just went up against. In fact, it's kind of built the same sort of way. You know, they've got a couple of decent corners. Well, a decent corner. They've got a decent safety. But their defensive line is pretty stacked. Like, they've, you know, Fletcher Cox can still blow up a game plan. Derek Barnett's a pretty experienced dude. And our offensive line is still a, let's call it, a work in progress. So it's a trapdoor game. We got to execute.
Yeah, don't let it be like a, you know, a letdown game at all. And we'll have full coverage immediately after the game live on our YouTube channel. Of course, it'll be on the podcast later that day. You guys want to do some What Up Windbags?
Let's do it.
It's a rhetorical question. We're doing What Up Windbags. Tracy Snow says, why do we suck in the red zone? Because Carr hasn't been able to go to the red zone before we get to the red zone.
Now, to the end zone before end we zone. Get to the red zone.
Now, we're ranked 21st. Which is below average, but that's better than last year. So it's an improvement, but still not great. Considering how great our offense is, we're below average in the red zone.
Mm-hmm. One of the things you need to look at is the play that I broke down with Foster Moreau, made that great block. That was in the red zone. That's what we were lacking previously. We were lacking execution blocking in the red zone. That's why we get 1-2 yard gains in the red zone on the run, where Drake and Jacobs both had runs from the red zone for touchdowns, and they both went in untouched. Drake's was like, I think, what, 12 yards, and Jacobs was I think like 4 or 5 yards. Mm-hmm. But the thing is the blocking up front, man. You can't rely on with the shortened and the small amount of space that you have there. You can't rely on your passing game to get your touchdowns. You have to rely on your running game to get the bulk of the touchdowns in the red zone. And if we're able to execute and run maybe different types of plays, as opposed to just stretch play right, left, stretch play right, inside stretch left, outside stretch right, and you can run different types of plays, like more power running plays, stuff like that, and use, fucking John Simpson obliterated that fucking outside linebacker when he came kick them out. That's what we can see more success.
Clean slate. I think this is a completely clean slate right now with Greg Olsen's offense. Like, if we do all the things that he showed in this past week in terms of tendencies, so more play action on first down, more passes on first down, I think we'll have a lot more success in the red zone. We're less predictable. We've got a lot of ways we can hurt you in the air. The worst thing about the red zone offense to me is when, well, obviously besides just meaningless runs right up the middle in a predictive fashion, but also Derek Carr on broken plays. It's just not his forte. You know, if the play needs to get extended in the red zone, that's where we see bad things happen.
Also, who in the holy hell is going to guard Darren Waller in the red zone?
Seriously.
Come on.
Renfro, Waller, Brian
Edwards. Who's going to cover all those guys? I don't know. Whatever. Safwan Ben Malik. Sounds like Soto's like chopping up cocaine back there. Safwan Ben Malik. I hope they get rid of Adam Schefter next. Would suit him, right? And this, of course, coming from with, you know, John Gruden getting fired. And then it came out that another email was leaked where Adam Schefter was sending an email to Dan Schneider, the owner of the Washington football team, with a story about the lockout. And he asked Schneider to make sure, like, hey, like, edit this for me. Like, am I putting everything in there that you want? Right.
I wanted to ask you about that, RJ. I wanted to ask you about that because you're in media where
huge balls.
Rory and I are not.
Oh yeah, that too. Yep.
Yeah,
that
too. And I mean, he didn't just send him a quote to hey, did you say this? It was the entire story for him to like read through and edit. Like, what do you think about that?
So a couple things. So first off, in pure journalistic standards, that's an absolute no-no, like a sin beyond sin, to not only just like show a subject what you're going to send before it prints, but to let him also edit it, like, hey, pick and choose what you want in here at surface value. If it was exactly like that, absolute sin. But also say this, a little bit out of context, because maybe it was half tongue in cheek. Maybe he was just like, you know, Dan Snyder was like, hey, Schefter, let me see it. Like, you know, maybe I know you don't want me to change anything, but maybe I'll have some edits. And so Schefter's like, okay, wink, wink, nod, nod, take a look at the editor. And maybe nothing happened. I don't know. Right. Was it pure Schneider got to like literally take out the wide out and like completely change it how he wants? Or was it tongue in cheek? I don't know. No one knows, I think, besides those two.
I think it's welcome to that. Welcome to the real world.
Dude, now we know how he gets the fucking stories he does. It's because he just fucking lets people write the shit for him.
Yeah. Well, and this is the other part. The really good journalists are the ones. So if I go to, you know, let's say I think Deshaun Watson's getting traded, right? And so I go to the Houston Texans GM and I go, hey, is Deshaun Watson getting traded? He's not just going to give me that information. He's not just going to say, like, oh, you know, the super valuable piece of information that's strategically not wise for me to give to you? I'm just going to tell you. No. What he'll do is he'll say, hey, I heard that Tua's ribs are busted and they're looking for someone to trade. Like he goes, a really good journalist goes to someone else and either A, that he knows that that person has a bone to pick with somebody. And so you'll get the information because they want vengeance or because I give information to them and therefore he'll give relationship to me. It's a give and take relationship, right? Like that's how good journalists work without being like completely in bed with them. Because you'll see like the Watson information that leaked today, that oozed leak. That was straight up someone from the Texans are like, all right, we want people to know that this is in the works. Like we're moving on to so hey, the other 30 teams in the league, if you want Deshaun Watson, you better come with a better offer. That oozed leak on purpose. For a purpose, right? But other parts of it are I give you information, you give me information. And that's the cleanest way for a journalist to work. And people think like, oh, that's kind of shady. He's telling them, but well, that's the alternatives are you're just a shill for them. And you write what they want to be an insider, which there's a ton of journalists like that in sports. That's the credible way to get scoops in this sport. Either you're a complete shill or you work for a network, ESPN or the league, and then you just get that information, right? I don't know what happened specifically with Schefter and Snyder, but I do know that this could be leaning towards how good journalism naturally works in sports, or this could be Schefter just straight up shilling by an NFL owner. Hey, you tell me what to say. I'll take credit. We'll move on. It could be either one of those ends.
Right.
Usually Rory does something different for scoops, but talk about that later.
Trombone. Honestly, though, I mean, as a fan of the NFL, do you want more information or less information? I want more information, right? I'd love that insider shit. So, you know what? It's a relationships business. I'm sure that they have a symbiotic relationship in terms of giving each other information, whatever. Schefter's good with me. Does the average fan really give a fuck?
Well, the best advice I can give is to ask yourself who benefits from this information coming out.
Right.
For every single situation. It's like, okay, that was good journalism on someone's standpoint. Or, okay, that's just an injury report that doesn't really mean a whole lot. It was just put out there. Or it's someone has a bone to pick with somebody. Or this was leaked on purpose because it benefits the person who leaked it. Always think in those terms. Like that's the best advice I can give is who benefits from this coming out? That's the best way to kind of tell. Because nothing gets out unless it was leaked on purpose. Like, Schefter isn't going through like Dan Snyder's trash, putting together like shredded documents to figure out information like this. That's not what's happening. Right? Uh-huh. This isn't Deep Throat. Last one. Damon Lafargo. Could you imagine the burning hatred, the boiling rage, the purulent septic resentment in Roger Goodell's face if he were forced to hand Mark Davis the Lombardi Trophy? I love this comment.
Dude.
Roger Goodell purposefully and blatantly trying to shaft Mark Davis, John Gruden, and the Raiders. What better vengeance on planet Earth than to force Roger, that football-hating pussy Goodell, to hand Mark Davis the Lombardi Trophy? That would be a moment.
Boys, if we win the Super Bowl, the last fucking thing I'm thinking about is Roger fucking Goodell.
What I'm thinking about is like, damn, how am I going to get out of jail because I'm running down the street with my pants down, swinging my dick around? That would be the
guys.
Be
the listen, I'll be thinking. You remember 1981 when we were the first wild card team to win the Super Bowl?
I was minus 2 years old.
Pete Rozelle, like you saw the fucking 30 for 30. Pete Rozelle and Al Davis hated each other, and they were gonna fucking beat the shit out of Pete Rozelle. And he took the Al Davis takes the fucking trophy and he smiles and says, "Just win, baby." That was his big fuck you to Pete Rozelle. You could screw us over left and right and do all this shit to fuck us over, but we still won. And that, my friends, is poetic. It happens 30 years later. The new commissioner shitting on us. The league's still against us. Al Davis' son, Mark, has his chance to say, "Fuck you, Roger Goodell. Fuck you very much. I appreciate that. Take the trophy and say, just win, baby. I love it."
Mm-hmm. One can help. And on that note... knock on wood if you're with me. Thank you so much for listening to the Autumn Windbags. We really appreciate it. Big thank you to Marcus Johnston for joining us, dropping some knowledge on us. And of course, make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel. A lot of great stuff on there. Plus, we add some extras and some stuff you don't always get on the podcast. Until next time, later.